This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent. Match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Back at it as we get into hour number two of the program. We've got a lot coming up. We have a very busy hour. Kevin Wheeler is going to join us in about 10 minutes or so. When we generally have Kevin on for our weekly conversation, we're calling it our Friday conversation on a Tuesday because we don't have a full show coming up on Friday. In fact, we've just got countdown to opening day on Friday, so we won't have a sports open line at all. Generally, what we do with Kevin is we look back at the week that was and we just talk through kind of the baseball week. It's going to be a little bit different today. This is really complicated. Not complicated like hard to understand, complicated like there's just a lot of stuff. And Major League Baseball has presented a study on pitching injuries. During the baseball winter meetings, this study was presented to club personnel, and a little bit had gotten out, but not all of it. Now this 62-page document is out there, and it looks at what's the reason for pitching injuries. And it's very interesting. It focuses a lot on the quest for stuff. And that is both velocity and it's also break on the baseball, both horizontal and vertical break, that as pitchers are continuing to try to throw harder and harder and harder with more violent break, that is breaking the pitchers in many ways. Also gets into the fact that pitchers are not being developed in the minor leagues to be ready to pitch in the big leagues, not from a quality of pitch standpoint, but from a usage standpoint. Minor league pitchers are treated with kid gloves, sometimes way too far. And we'll get into this with Kevin. And we've been critical of the Cardinals when it comes to the way they have developed players and developed pitching, and rightfully so. And that's why they've made the changes that they're making. That's why Heim Bloom is going to be doing everything that he's doing. But one area that the Cardinals have shifted lately that I think was a really, really smart move, and I am hopeful that this new regime that's coming in from a player development standpoint continues down the path that the team has already been on. The Cardinals have put a priority in the minor leagues of starting pitchers pitching deeper into games. That's just something that doesn't really exist in development. And you get these guys getting to the big leagues who are not ready to give you 6-7 innings, who are not ready to make 30-plus starts, who are not ready to throw over 200 innings, like all these things that they're just not ready, and they end up getting hurt. And this report that came out kind of backs that up, that teams are not doing a good job. And this is not a Cardinals problem. In fact, the Cardinals, they've shifted a little bit recently, and credit goes to them. That's one area that they definitely have gotten it right. But there's a lot into this. And Kevin's the perfect guy to talk about this. He played baseball at a very high level, was a D1 college baseball player, has covered Major League Baseball for a very, very long time, and he's also a youth coach in the area, so he works with young players coming up. So we'll get into the weeds a little bit on this one, and hopefully you can enjoy it. This was a really interesting report that came out today. I don't know. Kevin will make this point because we've talked about it a lot. The big rub here, because Major League Baseball now issues this big 62-page report basically saying you got to stop chasing velocity if you don't want to get hurt. Well, who gets the opportunities? Who are the pitchers that are getting drafted high? Who are the pitchers that are getting the opportunity? When the Cardinals had to bring up 9 million relief pitchers this year, who did they always pluck from the minor leagues? The guys who could throw 99. Chris Roycroft got an opportunity at the big league level because of how hard he threw. And that's not a criticism. That's the way you are successful, by throwing hard. Velo plays. It's harder to throw. It's harder to hit a pitch that's moving very fast. And I'm not taking anything away from guys who can really know the art of pitching and everything, but it's clear that's where the game has gone. So now Major League Baseball issues this report saying, yeah, but you're going to give these guys the opportunity, but oh yeah, by the way, it's also going to end up injuring them all at the same time. So there's a lot to unpack on this. We're going to do that with Kevin Wheeler coming up in just a moment or so. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. Matt Pauly continuing to hang out with you. So generally on Friday nights, we talk with Kevin Wheeler. Well, this is kind of, in a way, our Friday. This is our only regular 2-hour show this week. Yesterday, we did everything over at the Jackbox Sports Awards. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow, we're done a little early. Thursday, we're done a little early. Friday, we're running the countdown to opening day show. So Tuesday on a Friday, Kevin Wheeler joins us.
Good to be with you, man.
Yeah.
Happy Friday on a Tuesday.
Yeah, happy Friday on a Tuesday. but it's a good day to talk to you. And we were talking about this off the air a little bit. We had heard that Major League Baseball at the winter meetings had presented their findings about pitching injuries to teams.
Yep.
But that information was kind of being under lock and key. Today, various media outlets got it. It's 65 pages long. I've seen a lot of people write about it. Jeff Passan did a great job breaking it down on ESPN's website. And as I was reading it, I kept thinking about you, because you are somebody who played baseball at a pretty high level. You covered Major League Baseball and you coach amateur baseball. So you've got a lot of different forces in your life that allow you to probably look at what was written today in a pretty unique way.
Yeah, I think so. And in addition, like, you know, the covering part includes countless conversations with active players, retired players, instructors, you know, doctors and scientists. Like, I mean, you know, these are topics, especially the topic of the arm for a pitcher has been a topic for a long time, right? I mean, Jeff Passan wrote his book called The Arm. What was that, like 12 years ago?
Yeah.
Like, so, and this conversation goes way back before that. This goes back probably at least 25 years to where people are trying to figure out, how do we reduce the number of injuries, or how do we lessen the impact of them? And the problem is, the answers that are there are not the desirable answers to Major League Baseball teams. And I know people like to shift blame, and they like to blame. It's like, people like me that do what I do, like, you know, coaching amateurs. I don't coach pitchers, so, you know, it's not specifically me. But although coaching a team, I do handle pitchers.
Absolutely.
I do have to handle pitchers. I will say that my program that I work with, which is the Gamers in St. Louis, we are very strict about how we manage young arms. Our director, Matt Whiteside, is a former pitcher, former major league pitcher, so we play very careful attention. We do actually follow the recommendations of Dr. James Andrews. Most teams do not. But the point I'm trying to get to here is, this all starts at the top. It starts with Major League Baseball teams, and Major League teams do not want to do the things that would help this issue. Because what they're doing, they've been so hyper-focused in, really, again, probably starting with Moneyball as a theory, with results. the results are what matter. Well, look, velocity works. It works. It's harder to hit something moving faster and spinning faster. It just is. And that's why everybody does it. And that's why major league teams have always prioritized it. Always. You know, back in 1989, Steve Avery was drafted out of high school as a left-handed pitcher. And he threw like 89, 90. If he threw 84, he would not have been the number one pick right. in the draft. But he threw, for that time, what was very hard for a high school lefty. He'd get drafted by the Braves. He was in the big leagues pretty early. He was a part of the Braves dynasty rotation in the 1990s. But if he didn't throw 90, he wasn't going to be drafted at that level. And you know how we know? Because nobody who threw 84 was ever drafted number one.
Yeah.
Well, now instead of 90, that number is essentially 98 and above, right? If you're not throwing like that, you're not going to be drafted high. If you're not throwing at least in the mid-90s, you may not get drafted at all. And college teams now have some of those same standards. So it all trickles down from the top. And the criticism always starts with, it's the high school coaches or it's the travel ball coaches trying to make money. I'm like, no, everyone else is feeding the monster, and the monster is Major League Baseball. So if Major League Baseball says this is the standard you need to pass to be in our club, what do you think those kids are going to want to do?
Throw hard.
Right.
Yeah.
They're going to, if that's the standard that they have to meet, then that's what they have to give them or their career's over anyway.
And I thought a really interesting point in it, talked to a surgeon, said with the technology, there's this belief that, you know what, you can just go get Tommy John surgery and you're going to be good on the other side. But the point was made, there's 20% of pitchers that don't come back out on the other side.
Not as well, right?
Yeah. So you do that, and if that number was more out there, maybe guys would not. But again, it goes back to your point. How do you go become a major league pitcher? How do you go make millions of dollars? How do you win a Cy Young Award? Like, how do you do all these things?
Compared to football. We know playing football causes brain trauma.
Sure.
It causes CTE. Does it stop anybody from playing football?
Not many.
Nope.
Very few.
not the guys that keep playing.
Yeah.
Right? It's part of, it might be as simple as, hey, this is part of the cost of throwing hard, and that's the cost, that's what it takes to play at the high college level or to play at the professional level. But I will say, you mentioned there are several interesting parts to this. Since we kind of already hinted at it, let's start with some of the amateur stuff, because, you know, I've been coaching, like, informally amateur players for more than 20 years. But here in St. Louis, with the Gamers, with All-Star Performance, since 2007. So I've been doing it quite a while as an individual instructor, as a catching instructor, as a head coach for a 14U baseball program. And we operate in a way that most programs do not. There are others that do, and we all bond over this because we joke about it with other, you know, amongst ourselves. But what we have to get Major League Baseball to do, this is where Major League Baseball has a role in this. They have to lay down the law on the organizing groups in youth baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And by the organizing groups, I mean the tournament organizers,
right?
Groups like Perfect Game. Perfect Game provides a valuable service. Kids get seen.
They're a little bit predatory at the same time,
though. It can be.
Yeah.
Listen, when you talk about those, I don't have any personal issues with Perfect Game. But yeah, they charge a lot of money. You know, there are a lot of things that go into that. I mean, they do it as a business. It's they're not doing it just for the good of the game.
And they make a lot of money.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
But if Major League Baseball goes to them and says and starts putting public pressure on them, you need to start enforcing pitch counts in all of your tournaments, because they do in some of their big ones where they have people who keep score. And they track the pitch count, and you're allowed a certain amount per day if you're a certain age, and then you have to rest a certain number of days. They're called the Pitch Smart Guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority of youth tournaments do not even check those things. I see it every summer. Because, again, coaching 14-year-olds, I'm watching 14-year-olds out there throwing 115, 120 pitches in a 7-inning game, and then the next game they turn around and they're playing shortstop. And the next, or they're catching or something. Like, the only way you can regulate those kind of things is from the top pushing down and saying, you guys, you need to enforce these rules, or we will not scout your events. We will ban our scouts from your events if you don't do this. And it won't cover all of them because there are a lot of local tournament organizers who don't have the infrastructure, who don't have all that. But you know what? Well, you know where the future major league players are?
In those events.
The big tournaments. Yeah. The big ones. And I'm talking about starting at 11, 12 years old. Because you'll see some of the biggest abuses at the younger ages because nobody's paying attention.
I would argue the moment the Major League Baseball decides to release this report, there is kind of a, use the term moral obligation. That's probably a little bit strong, but there is almost a moral obligation. They present this information. Now you got to do something about it. I think you're right. It starts right there.
And you know what? If Major League Baseball doesn't want to go to the point, and I'm putting this, again, I'm putting a lot of the weight of this on Major League Baseball because they are the only ones with the power to change it. You're not going to tell a business you're trying to make money, go make less money or risk teams not coming to your tournaments and do that at the risk of your business just because we say you should. Major League Baseball has to have a stake in this. I would argue Major League Baseball should try to buy Perfect Game or start their own tournaments that they run all over the place and put in really strict standards. So which do you think people are going to want to go to?
Did we go to that one?
And do you want to go to the Major League Baseball sanctioned events that are monitored, that are controlled by Major League Baseball, and it's not just for money? Which would you rather send your team to?
And like we're just going down the line. I think they got rid of the Major League Baseball Scouting Bureau a few years
ago. Yeah, they did.
So there's a lot of out of work scouts right now. You could rehire some of these scouts and put them in that, and those reports could then be sent to all the teams.
Here's the crazy thing: is you could do something like that, create competition in that space, give people a healthier alternative, right? Because the best programs, if you put that out there and you say, hey, Major League scouts will only be at these events for high school players. They're only going to be at MLB-run tournaments. They're not going to be at Perfect Game. They're not going to be at PBR. They're not going to be at any of the other ones. And then you get into the college ranks and say, hey, guys, come with us. Do with us so we can fix this problem. And you get more of the college coaches going to those, too. The other tournament organizers will have to adapt and do the same kinds of things. And then you can start to make some progress. And here's the thing to me about Major League Baseball. The cost of doing this would be less than the cost of one starting pitcher contract going bad because of an arm injury.
Absolutely.
It would not cost you hundreds of millions of dollars. It would not cost that much. It just wouldn't. And the return over 10, 15, 20, 25 years could be improved arm health up and down the sport, which benefits Major League Baseball. But because we don't have a core structure in place, because everything's kind of localized or everything is done only by private entities that do not have Major League Baseball's best interests in mind, I'm saying Major League Baseball should be protecting their own business by expanding their business into the youth section so that you can have better control over how young pitchers are used. And again, you know, it's pitch counts, yes, but it's also like if a kid, like I try to operate on a rule. It's not 100%. It doesn't always work, but like I try to operate on a rule. If you pitch game one of the day, you're either off in game two or you're a first baseman or you're a DH. You're not playing shortstop after you pitched in the same day. You're not catching and pitching in the same day. And it's hard to do because you have this other side. Right. You have players that don't want to sit.
Right. Parents that don't want their kids.
Don't want their kids to sit. And you have to be willing to tell them this is what's better for your player. And if you don't like it, go somewhere else, because this is how the smart people are going to do it. We're taking care of your kid. And you look at the youth baseball setup. So a typical weekend, forgetting which kind of tournament you're in, a typical weekend, you'll have two games on a Saturday. And then you'll have bracket play on Sunday, which could be one game, and it could be four games. You can have, and I've done this a million times, six games in 2 days. At what level of sports does that make any sense from a physical health standpoint?
It doesn't.
And some teams go into that with only 10, 11, 12 players.
Yeah, the most.
Because nobody wants to sit. Everybody wants to play every game. So don't go in. So my program, we go in sometimes with 15, 16 guys. I've got room to sit people. I have the ability to say you're not playing every game. And again, it's not always perfect. You get injuries, you're missing players, but you should try. But at no level of baseball do you ever play six games in 2 days.
The most is four games in 3 days when like some college leagues do a Friday game, a Saturday doubleheader, and a single game on Sunday.
But then that'll be followed by an off day.
Yeah, by 3 days off. Until
and also, those are grown men.
Yeah.
College baseball players, I got to break it to everybody. You may call them kids. Those are grown men. They're 6'2", 220. They're fully developed. They're working out year-round. They're not 12-year-old kids.
Okay, you said working out year-round. Just a couple other things from this. They identified more injuries coming between the start of spring training and opening day as opposed to once the season gets started. That's connected to these guys not operating correctly in their offseason.
Well, it's a combination. To me, I'm going to combine that with another topic. So to me, that is connected to the not training minor league pitchers to be major league pitchers.
Yes.
Those two things are the same idea, even though they're different things, right? So what happens is they're reducing workload so much in spring training that when you get to the regular season, you're not ready. But the games matter, so you're going all out. Right?
Yeah.
And yes, some of it is related to guys doing a lot in the offseason to try to improve, right? So, you know, you can't going to driveline, working on adding 2 miles an hour or increasing carry on your fastball or your spin rate on your curveball or tunneling, whatever. Like, some of it's that because you're training. A lot of guys are training more intensely than they used to. But in spring training, you also don't get the number of innings that you need oftentimes. And then you get into the season and it's like, well, your last start in spring training, you threw 80 pitches. Now go throw 100. Well, you're increasing the workload 20%.
And you might be doing it when it's really cold outside.
You're doing it where you're taking spring training games, which are low intensity, and regular season games, which are high intensity. You get paid for those games and by how you perform. Your team makes or misses the playoffs based on those games. So you go from low intensity and not enough work to really high intensity and more work in a week. And then you throw that in with how minor league pitchers have been developed in the last 10, 15, 20 years, where you'll take a guy, and I'll use a Cardinals example. Tink Hentz is still not thrown 100 innings in a year.
No.
He's not had a significant arm injury, although he did have, I think, a shoulder thing this past season. But the idea that you're going to limit guys to 3, 4, 5 innings of work in the minors and 75 pitch outings, and then when they get to the big leagues, hey, we need you to go 6. And we need you to throw 100 pitches. And we need you to do that 32 times. You're training to run a 5K, but you have to run a marathon. It doesn't make sense.
We have been very critical of the Cardinals and their player development and everything going on. And that's why Chaim Bloom is here. And that's why a lot of new people are coming to the organization. One area that the Cardinals very recently shifted to and they got right is last year the Cardinals led all of minor league baseball in innings per start.
By their starting pitchers.
They started pushing starting pitchers further in the minor leagues, and that is going to pay out dividends.
Yep.
Yeah, that's
the best news I've heard about like player development at the Cardinals in a long time because it makes so much sense.
And hopefully this new group of people coming in continue down that path.
Yeah, and I mentioned Tink Hentz because he's an example, but that's not the typical Cardinals prospect, pitching prospect right now. You know, he might have specific concerns. You know, he had the shoulder thing this past year. He's slight of frame, so maybe that's why they've kind of gone easy on him. But that was just an example of what you see in a lot of places. But I think they're ahead of the curve on that, and hopefully they stick with it by doing that, you're also forcing pitchers to not just go max effort all the time. You cannot tell a person not to try hard, right? You can't put a limit on velocity. You can't put a limit on spin rate that gets you the better breaking ball because that works. You can't tell a pitcher be less than you can be. But what you can do is put them in a position where they have to learn that that's not what they can do all the time. That's how pitchers have been developed for 120 years. That's how Bob Gibson did it, right? That's how those guys back in the day threw 350 innings because they didn't throw as hard as they could all the time. And the reality for 2024 is your best place to be is in between those two. Throwing harder, but not all the time.
And the last thing on that before I get you out of here, this was more anecdotal than them really having science behind it, but they made the point that the pitch clock may have actually been a good thing, not a bad thing when it came to injuries, because it forced pitchers to not be able to throw max effort every single time.
I don't disagree. Yeah. And by the way, even if it's not making it better, it's certainly not making it worse.
No.
Look, we all know what leads to arm injuries. It's effort. It's the amount of effort. And this applies to anything. Do any physical activity at max effort, you're at more risk of getting hurt. Compare a sprint to a jog. You're not going to pull a hamstring jogging. You will sprinting full speed sometimes. Every time you're working at max effort, you are at more risk of injury. We know this. It's a biomechanical fact. It's not the pitch clock. It's none of these other things. People will say it's the sticky stuff and they've got to try harder. No, it's still the max effort.
100%.
It's still the max effort, because if you put the sticky stuff on there, they're not going to try less hard. They're still going to try as hard as they do without it. They're just going to get a better result.
That's Kevin Wheeler. You'll be up on the Gas House Gang tonight with a special guest and Derek Gould.
Yeah, it was great. We had a great fun with it. I would highly recommend listening. We got a lot on Nolan Arenado, on the what if they get caught in between selling and rebooting and also competing. It's a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, it's coming up tonight at 8 o'clock. Thanks for stopping by. That's Kevin Wheeler. I'm Matt Pauly. We'll be back coming up in just a moment. Really interesting conversation coming up with somebody who's trying to help fans support basically minor league baseball players financially. I'll go through all that coming up in just a moment. It's Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX. This is the Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. So this next conversation you're going to hear, I recorded it when I was at the baseball winter meetings in Dallas last week. It's with Rob Connolly, co-founder of a company called Finleet. Now, the reason we didn't run it last week, actually, was because the company was still waiting to get official approval and everything. And when I talked to Rob, I gave him my word that we would not run it until they were a full go and they had all the approvals and everything that goes along with the industry that they're in. And they got that here over the last few days, giving us the opportunity to play this interview for you. So you've probably never heard of Finleet, and we're in a really weird spot right now when it comes to athletics and money. Specifically money for athletes. And we think about this largely in terms of college athletics and name, image, likeness. You know, yesterday when we did the show at the Jack Buck Awards, we had Chris May, the athletic director at SLU, and Laird Veach, the athletic director at Mizzou. And a lot of our conversation was based off that. Well, the interesting money side of things is not just when it comes to amateur athletes, actually professional athletes, but somewhat lowly paid at the moment, professional athletes can be part of it as well. That's where Finleet comes in. And I don't even know what to think about all this, but when Rob Connolly, the founder of Finleet, introduced himself, I wanted to talk to him. So this is my conversation. We recorded it last week in Dallas, and the first thing I asked Rob was just to kind of describe his company and what they're trying to do.
We actually learned that minor league baseball prospects for the past 7, 8, 10 years have been taking private lending deals from hedge funds, where they would take upfront capital in exchange for future earnings. Most notably, Fernando Tatis Jr. with the Padres did a deal with a private hedge fund where he received approximately $500,000 for 10% of his future earnings, where that hedge fund made $34 million off of his $341 million contract extension just 2 years after doing that deal. So what essentially we're doing is, you know, giving fans the opportunity to participate and have a seat at the table on these type of opportunities.
How does that work?
So we will come with a deal with an athlete where an athlete will come to us and want, needs financial resources for off-season training or housing or helping, you know, maybe hedge against an injury risk. And so we will then work out a deal with that athlete for a percentage of his future earnings for upfront capital. And then we allow the fans to essentially purchase that from him and able to share in that athlete's journey, both emotionally and financially.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but what you just talked about with Fernando Tatis Jr., the amount of money going back in that direction, in many ways that sounds predatory to me. I guess, is what you guys do maybe a little bit more fair to the athlete than that type of situation?
Yeah, so it's interesting. There's two sides of this kind of answer. So one, it can seem predatory on the surface because we only talk about the big wins, but you need to realize that a lot of these players take these deals, never make it to the majors, and they never have to pay that money back, which is a big asset, big part of this. What was the other part of the question?
Just the front, is this more fair, I guess, than one of those hedge fund type situations?
Exactly. So what's interesting about Finleet is when athletes are doing deals with us, they're doing it directly with the fans in more of a retail environment, giving fans the ability to pull their money together, which tends to be better for the athletes because they're getting a slightly higher valuation versus working with a private hedge fund where, you know, it's all up front, all at once, and they're trying to get the absolute lowest valuation possible. You know, it seems like it's a little bit more of a better opportunity for the fans to get involved. On top of that, when it's all said and done, you know, after the amount is raised, the athlete not only gets the capital, but now they have thousands of fans that are really connected with that athlete in a very personal and unique way.
What's the, from a selection process, can any minor league player reach out to you guys, or do you kind of vet them and say, okay, this person has a X percent chance of getting to the big league, so this is a deal that we feel comfortable with?
Yeah, great question. So we built an AI algorithm tool that allows us to evaluate players using data. So we look at tons of different metrics and decide, you know, what player makes the most sense for our fans to have the opportunity to make a great return on. So one of the prospects we really like is Leonardo Bernal, who's one of the top catching prospects in baseball. He happens to be the number 6-9 prospect in the Cardinals organization, depending on what site you look at. So with Leonardo, you know, we contacted him. We talked about, you know, how Finley works, and he loved the idea. And we were able to get a deal in place with him where fans are able to invest in Leonardo's career.
How does that, how did that come together? Like, do athletes reach out to you? Do you reach out to athletes or agents involved? What's that whole process like?
Yeah, so it's been great. So a lot of athletes, especially in minor leagues, have heard about us now. We're getting our name out there. So with Leonardo's case, he reached out to us asking us how it worked. Him as agent met with us over the Arizona Fall League, and we just worked out perfect. We got the deal done in the Fall League.
Do agents like these type of deals?
Yeah, so it's really funny with the way the agents work. So some agents will say, you know, never do these deals. It's the worst deal. You don't do it. Some agents say you should definitely do the deal. But we feel like most of the agents take a neutral aspect to this because, you know, if they tell an athlete not to do a deal with us and then athlete never makes it, the athlete will be mad at them. Mm-hmm. And then if they tell them to do the deal and the athlete makes $350 million, you know, they feel like the athlete may be mad at them. So if by taking a neutral aspect and sharing all the details with the athletes, let them make an informed decision. And that's the best way the agents handle this.
I think a lot of people don't realize the life of a minor league baseball player. And some of these guys make good signing bonuses when they get drafted, but a lot of them don't. And it's not a ton of money. If you want to put your body is your tool to be in the best spot. So if you want to get coaching in the offseason, if you want to have access to things, that takes money. And some guys don't have access to it. So to me, that's where this is a really cool thing, because these minor league players get access to something that maybe they didn't have before. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. We're a platform that allows these athletes to give them the best chance to optimize their on-the-field potential. And by giving them this capital from fans, it's a great way for them to really give them the best chance to make it to the big leagues.
What is it for you? Like, because I mentioned earlier, and I talked about college athletics and the wild, wild west that is right now. You're working in a athletics-related financial space that's kind of on a new frontier. What's it like right now working in that realm in this athletics world we're living in right now, where everything's changing on a daily basis?
It's absolutely insane. Like, talking to some college athletes who, you know, want to do deals with us, I look back like 10 years ago and go, like, how is this even happening? It's just so unique right now, and it's such a fast-moving industry. It's crazy. It's really hard to try to keep up with. It's been a lot of fun, though.
Can you do deals with college athletes?
Absolutely, yeah. So our deals aren't NIL deals. They're actually private financing deals, which don't fall under the NIL laws. So we can actually do deals with athletes.
From a fan standpoint, if they want to get involved in this, can you talk through, in addition, just the emotional connection of it, feeling like you're supporting a player for a team that you support, what are the other benefits of being involved in this?
Yeah, so we have different investment levels. We give away signed balls. There's an MLB package where the fans that invested in this opportunity can actually come out to spring training and meet Bernal and have a meal with him and get to know him on a personal level. But it's all about building those connections with these athletes, giving them the resources they need to maximize their potential, and just creating these unique opportunities.
That's another interesting thing about this, because we're also living in a world right now where VIP experiences are so important, and there's so much value to that. So you guys are doing the money side of it, but then there's also a chance for fans to experience something that they wouldn't be able to experience in just a normal situation.
Exactly right. I mean, it's not about just the money. It's about that emotional connection with the athlete and the behind the scenes experience. I mean, the virtual meet and greets, you know, the personal letter from Bernal saying, thank you for participating in my career. All those little things add up to a really unique experience that you can't get normally in these business investment opportunities. This is a little bit more personal, and it makes it really a unique offering for fans to participate.
Yeah, I find this to be interesting. I'm sure there might be some people listening who would be interested in what you guys do, especially with the Bernal connection. What is the way to get in contact with you guys?
Yeah, the best way is to go through our website, finleet.com. That's finleete.com. And you can see Emmanuel Class A with the Guardians on there, as well as Leonardo Bernal.
Rob, really good to meet you. Interesting to learn about this new world that we're living in right now.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it, Matt.
That was my conversation from last week at the baseball winter meetings in Dallas with Rob Conley. Again, he is a co-founder of Finleet, a really interesting concept. I'm still trying to grasp completely how I feel about it. I like it in, the premise of it, I like it. I just, it's just kind of it's a brave new world. You wouldn't have heard about stuff like that previously. So still trying to figure out thoughts on it. But I hope you enjoyed that conversation and you look at athletics maybe a little bit differently. And you can get involved, like he said, if you want to. Somebody like Leonardo Bernal, a Cardinals prospect, is involved with it. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up this edition of the program. It's Graybar Sports Open Line. Starting to wrap up this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. Just a reminder for you, the rest of the week is going to be a little bit different. Tomorrow we've got SLU Billikens basketball, so we're going to wrap things up a little early, around 6:45 or so. And then on Thursday, we'll do just a half hour show in front of Thursday Night Football. And Friday, it is our countdown to opening day show, as Mike Claiborne and myself will come your way. Generally, that show will air on Thursdays, but this week, because of Thursday Night Football, it is going to air on Friday. So that's what's going to be coming up over the next few days. Also coming up in just a moment, it is the Gas House Gang. Today, a little history made in the very short history of the Gas House Gang. Our first ever guest on the program, as Derek Gould, lead baseball writer with the Post-Dispatch and STL Today, was on, and you'll be able to hear it. I mentioned this earlier with Kevin Wheeler. I think we talked about this during our 5:15 sports during Total Information PM. You'll hear it for yourself. I was a little surprised that the takeaway from the Gas House Gang for many people on social media today was that Nolan Arenado might not get traded. And I just, are there challenges that go along with it? Yeah, there are. I'm not trying to run away from that. I'm not trying to run away from the fact that Arenado did not, per se, request a trade, any of those things. But there are people out there that just have this belief that something's going to happen and Arenado is going to remain a Cardinal. And I'll be honest, like, part of me would like that to happen. I like Nolan Arenado a lot. I really do. But I don't see that happening. I don't really see a legit scenario where he sticks around. So you'll get to hear that coming up with Derek Gould. He is going to join Tom Ackerman and Kevin Wheeler. That's who's on the Gas House Gang today. A reminder for you, I know we keep talking about this, but it's something. Yeah, last night it was fun. I was at the Jack Buck Awards. I can't tell you how many people came up to me and made comments about the Gas House Gang. It really actually surprised me. It's something that's only been going for a few weeks now. And, if you just hear me on the radio, you can't recognize me. You can't see me. You can see me on that. So people kind of knew, saw me, and I multiple people came up to me and recognized me from that and asked about it and said how much they enjoyed it. So it's something that you can watch live on social media channels. You can watch the archive of it on YouTube, or you can listen to it on all the podcast platforms. It's available. Just do a search for the Gas House Gang. My personal favorite, what I would encourage you to do, you can listen, take it in however you would like. But my personal favorite is just being able to go back and watch it on YouTube. But like we had mentioned previously, it now has its own podcast feed available on various podcast platforms. So you can check that out for yourself. And we always play it at 8:00 as a radio program. So that's going to be coming up in just a few minutes. Thanks so much for being tuned in with us this evening. We'll talk to you again tomorrow at 6:00 for another Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX.